Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today's subject is testosterone and other forms of rejuvenative therapy. The book is Keep It Up, The Power of Precision Medicine to Conquer Low T and Revitalize Your Life. And we're talking to board-certified endocrinologist and specialist in andrology, which is the study of andropause and male hormonal issues, Dr. Florence Comite. Dr. Comite has a private practice in Manhattan, and she is author of this great new book. So, Dr. Comite, in part one, you were sort of laying out the case for testosterone as being a very, very important hormone. And so let's address the controversy about testosterone, because lately there's been, for a long time there's been controversy about that. Many doctors are reluctant to prescribe testosterone for men because they say, well, it causes prostate cancer. Now, more recently, there have been concerns raised about testosterone causing heart disease. There's some new study, so you've obviously looked at this. What's your take?
So let me start with the prostate cancer. Let me just explain how we can look at it and see quite obviously that it doesn't even appear that way if you just look at when you get prostate cancer. When does a man experience prostate cancer? When is it diagnosed? Typically as they age. It's not when you're young, and testosterone levels are quite high when you're young. So just biologically speaking, the data has shown that you don't suffer with prostate cancer when you're in your youth, like 20s, when testosterone levels are high. There is a lot of research looking at that, and even with a man on testosterone, providing that he's monitored by a urologist or doctor who can follow the changes in the prostate, there are other diseases that are far more likely to hurt you than a low testosterone, for example, diabetes or heart disease, and you don't increase your risk of prostate cancer. So there's a lot of data. There's a gentleman who wrote the foreword of my book on the faculty at Harvard, and his name is Abraham Morgenthaler, and he himself speaks to this topic quite eloquently. Heart disease, that's another topic.
Sure.
And yes, the data that came out, I think it was last February, and it was a study that allegedly used about 1,130 men from the VA system, where they collected the data on the men, but really didn't look at the men themselves and did not have any data because no blood tests were actually drawn to monitor these men during the treatment. And what was reported is that there seemed to be an increased risk of heart disease. Well, it turns out that many of folks in the community, and this includes Dr. Morgenthaler and a lot of his colleagues, as well as my colleagues, have asked JAMA to retract that paper because of that 1,100 plus men, 100 were actually women. And when you look at the...
Wait a minute, how does that happen? That's kind of weird.
I guess it happens. And when you look at the rest of the group, only about 100 or 120 of the patients were qualified to be in the study.
Hmm.
What's really missing there is data. There was no management. There was no understanding of what was going on in that particular man's body. It was just a collection of men who happened to fall into a situation where there were some deaths in the group from heart disease on the group treated with testosterone that slightly was more significant. So it was a statistical, it was statistically of interest. And again, they weren't working with the right data. You can't have 100 women and describe them as men in the system.
Well, so you know, isn't this Dr. Comite, a little bit like when they did the Women's Health Initiative study, and suddenly, to their horror, they discovered that hormone replacement therapy was causing women heart attacks. And all these women, millions of women across the United States, panicked, and they went off their hormone replacement therapy, went through horrible hot flashes. And then, 7, 8, 9 years later, they reanalyzed the data, and they said, gee, you know, it just appears that older women who are at much higher risk of heart disease, they start it late, they might see a slight uptick in their cardiovascular risk, and that for the vast majority of women, the hormones are protective against heart disease. Is there some analogy there?
There is an analogy there, and it largely has to do with the fact that monitoring the individual is what's paramount. You really must look at each individual, and the data that has come out subsequently, as you said, actually reported in the New England Journal of Medicine, has shown that if you start hormonal, and I believe in hormonal bioidentical. I call it hormonal optimization because we're not truly replacing what the body did in their 20s or 30s. We're actually trying to minimize the use of hormones or anything else that we introduce to keep the body in balance and moderation so that we can establish health and not just, we're not replacing anything. We don't, women don't go back to cycling, men don't go back necessarily to being 20-something year olds. It's about health. So yes, there is an analogy there. I think the other piece that was different for men and women is that the drugs that were used at the time were fairly slanted towards just oral estrogen and oral progesterone of the sort that I've never used. Premarin and Provera had a 90% global market share and called on every gynecologist, their company, which is why it's Eris, called on every gynecologist, and that was the only drug study. And so in women, my bias is never to use oral estrogen. It goes through the liver and it increases cholesterol. It has that risk, and it can contribute in some way. So as long as women use sources of estrogen, and testosterone actually is useful in women as well. We have far less than men, but it's very, very important. Those two combined ingredients as women age in lower levels, but not orally, will really make a difference for health. And as you reported years later, the studies have come out using different formulations as well. Well, so in men, it's an important concept too.
Well, clearly, because if you have a man who's sad and tired and exhausted and has a big belly and maybe pre-diabetic, and that patient might be reinvigorated by testosterone, which we also know, you know, the heart's a muscle. And if we strengthen the skeletal muscles with testosterone, we also strengthen the heart muscle with testosterone. We get a man motivated, energized, they begin exercising. Isn't that a better prospect from the standpoint of cardiovascular health than a sad sack with low T?
It is, absolutely. And Ron, I have to say that you've hit on the primary points. You want to know yourself. You want to bring, you know, the data to your doctor to say, listen, I never used to be depressed. My mind was always clear and sharp. I had a lot of energy. In fact, you might think, or people who aren't in the field as you are and I am, might think, oh, it's sexual function that's driving all these men. But guess what? It's not. It's energy. Most men complain about the lack of energy. They just don't have that get up and go. They don't have any motivation. They're missing it, and they don't know why. And even when they want to go to the gym and they love to work out, they feel better on the couch because once they do go to the gym, recovering is a lot harder. So a lot of these symptoms and signs of low testosterone is really much more affects the total life quality, the lack of energy, the lack of ability to perform. And if you're feeling those kinds of symptoms, you really want to do something about it.
Well, and you have your own distinct ideas about how to provide that testosterone replacement, because you know you can't watch a sports event these days without seeing several ads for some form of either erectile dysfunction medication, Viagra, Cialis, you name it, or nowadays testosterone. You know, there's Axiron, you put it under the arms. There's, you know, the Schmiron testosterone things that would come from a pump. But you have your own protocol for actually several different options for men who have low testosterone, correct?
Yes, and there are several options. In contrast to women, men do not do as well with certain forms of Schmiron, as you describe it, testosterone. The difference being, in men, there are what we call agents in the body, in the skin, that actually convert testosterone to estrogen or to another hormone called dihydrotestosterone. And both estrogen and dihydrotestosterone, which we usually abbreviate DHT, when they go up, they can cause other side effects. They're not dangerous in general, but they can be quite annoying. Like when estrogen goes up, you can get breast tingling and discomfort, nipple tingling, discomfort. You could get breast tissue. And when that's called gynecomastia. And that you will see as an outcome, you know, for men who are taking testosterone, but it's not being monitored, and as a result, their estrogen is high. So estrogen should be monitored as well. DHT can affect your prostate. It can cause prostate growth, not cancer, but enlargement, which men suffer with anyway, and so you don't want to contribute to that, or hair loss. And so you have to be carefully monitored, particularly using the creams, which I think is most widespread because it's available. It's just easy, it's available, it seems simple. My bias with testosterone, though, has to do with keeping the body physiologically in the best shape possible, meaning I want the body to do its own thing if it can naturally. And what my studies have shown is that what's really going on, particularly in the 40, 50, even 60-year young male, is that it's not only the fact that the testosterone circulating in the body is low, but it's because the brain is not perceiving that that testosterone is low. And so there is a hormone called luteinizing hormone, or LH, and that hormone should be able to trigger the release of testosterone and the manufacture of testosterone in the testes. When that hormone is low and testosterone is low, there's a disconnect. So we actually not only look at free testosterone, total testosterone, but we also include LH, or luteinizing hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And when we find that the luteinizing hormone is low at the same time that the testosterone is low, we prefer to use human chorionic gonadotropin, or HCG.
Now, that sounds a little bit like that, you know, the HCG miracle diet program, you know, which is, you know, you buy like a little tincture bottle that has HCG in it, and it's supposed to help you lose weight. Is that in some ways similar to that?
I think the most they have in common is it sounds like it.
Okay.
So number one, HCG must be taken as an injection. When
right.
you take a little tincture of it, or you put it on your skin, or you think you're taking a pill, it gets digested in the body and it doesn't work that way.
Right.
So you can't take it that way. It has to be as an injection. And but secondly, there's really no data that connects HCG and diet. What's really effective there, and I've never used it in for that reason, but in reading what people do, or what is, you know, being done out there, it's HCG as a tincture in conjunction with a 500 calorie diet.
Right, you're going to lose weight.
Anyone's going to lose weight on a 500 calorie diet.
Right. Right.
But does that really count? No, because the weight you're losing can be muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not that interested in the number on the scale, by the way, Ron. We're
yeah.
interested in losing visceral fat. We're interested in losing the deep down solid belly fat, not the jiggling kind of fat, but the solid fat, because that's the fat that predicts diabetes and disease. And so when you look at HCG, in our hands, HCG is a hormone that it's a natural hormone. It resembles LH in its action. And so the goal there is we give it 2 or 3 times a week, because you actually want to pulse it. You don't want to take it all the time.
So it jump starts your own testosterone production,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Right.
That's exactly the goal. And what we see for the vast majority of men is the natural production of testosterone. And you can't over-treat in that way. Plus, you see far fewer reactions to that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the tingling as often. You don't get breast tissue as often. And you can manage that. And what I particularly love about it is we're allowing the body to do what it does well, take care of itself physiologically, hold its balance. My belief is, and there's data for this in men and women, is the longer you get the body to do what it's supposed to do, the longer you'll live and the healthier you'll live. And actually, there was just a study in women that showed when they had children at an older age, they lived longer. When they were able to conceive, you know, and they were older, in an older age group, they actually had extended life expectancy. And there is data in men that way, too. So HCG is frequently used, and I have used it for 30 years, in men who are interested in conceiving, you know, getting a woman pregnant.
Right. This is an important point, yeah, because if mm-hmm. one of the things about testosterone is that paradoxically you think, oh, I have low testosterone, I'll take testosterone and I'll be more potent sexually and I'll be able to have kids. Actually, testosterone is a great birth control pill. So for younger men who have low testosterone, it's a dilemma. We say, have you completed your family yet? And if they haven't, then maybe they should be taking HCG instead of testosterone, correct?
Exactly. You know, except you want to be careful, because HCG will trigger spermatogenesis and improve sperm. And so you want to make sure that their timing is correct. Testosterone is a great substitute, particularly if you take it as an injection.
Mm-hmm.
it has to really, in terms of the way the body metabolizes it, and again, their men are different, but the vast majority of men, a weekly injection of testosterone is another route besides the creams. In fact, there are new drugs coming along that's been used in Europe and Australia where they're giving testosterone every 4 weeks or every 12 weeks even. And I think the FDA, while they haven't yet approved the every 3 months, are looking at the every month injection. Right now, it's really every week in the
formula. It's kind of like a slow time release of the testosterone, right?
Exactly. It's like in a depot formulation.
Don't you run the risk, though, that when you give the injection, you're going to get a high level, but then, you know, by Thursday, you know, just before your next injection, the level will decline, you get uneven levels?
You can, in the old days, when they were giving it every 2 weeks, and men will tell you about a, you know, biphasic response is what you're describing, where they'll feel fabulous, but 2 weeks later, they're feeling awful again. Now, that's tied to the fact that a lot of men have to go to their doctor's office, and it was just coming every week may not be doable.
Right.
But if you actually take testosterone weekly, and the way we do it in our hands, we're doing subcutaneous testosterone, not intramuscular, and we teach our male patients to give it to themselves once we've done a workup and we think it's appropriate for them.
So that's better. You don't have to go a deep intramuscular injection, which requires some accuracy and skill.
And a thick needle.
Yeah, and it hurts.
Frankly, if I was a male, I would say, nope, that's not for me.
And it hurts.
If you can use a very thin, small needle and just go under the skin, or what we call subcutaneous, the pain is non-existent, and most men feel comfortable injecting it in their thigh or in the top of their buttocks.
Now, is that testosterone bioidentical testosterone? Because that is a concern. For women, you prefer the bioidentical form. Is the type that's injected identical to the testosterone your body makes?
It's not exactly identical, largely because of what you mentioned earlier, the fact that it's in a depot formulation because you want the slow release. Mm-hmm. So in general, in the body, you would like testosterone levels to go up and down as the natural body frequency allows. But in this case, you're looking at a depot formulation, and there's a slow release over time. So it's usually paired with an oil, either soy or cotton seed oil, and most men tolerate it just fine. And when they feel good and they see signs of their diabetes and heart disease reversing, inflammation, they're losing weight, they're putting on muscle, which, by the way, it's very hard to put on muscle as you age into your 50s, 60s, and 70s. And that weakness develops into something called sarcopenia. Yeah. And that's what makes men and women, that's why women need testosterone too, more vulnerable to disease as you get older. Or if you get a disease and you don't have enough muscle, it's harder to get better. That's why people who are sick, people who have, you know, AIDS or cancer, they go through, they get described as being cachectic.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a loss of muscle. And that's where we're tying us back to part one of your show, where that initial decline in testosterone by 1% to 3% a year in your 30s eventually leads to sarcopenia, loss of lean muscle, increased body fat. So that's why we're not looking at a number. We're looking at the amount of muscle your body is able to sustain over time. And can we avoid putting on that visceral fat that generally goes right to our belly as we age?
And in the remaining time that we have, let's touch on some of the other so-called anti-aging hormones. You know, you're an endocrinologist. You're familiar with these. DHEA, often endocrinologists poo-poo DHEA because they feel, you know, it's not part of the regular medical formulary. What's your take on DHEA? It's available just over the counter. You can go to a health food store and get it.
Well, in this country, DHEA is available over the counter. You're 1,000% correct. But actually, in many countries, including our neighbor to the north, Canada, you cannot get it without a prescription.
And I actually think that's a good idea. Unfortunately,
it is a hormone.
Yeah, it's a hormone.
It's a hormone, and it's very important to the body. So again, uniquely, you have to look at levels. You shouldn't just be popping DHEA, because in some men, DHEA is perfectly adequate into the 40s, 50s, 60s. It usually, though, starts dropping, and the level we're looking at is not what's typically on a lab report. Typically on a lab report, it'll say that you can go up to a level of 150. Technically speaking, though, in terms of performance and in terms of health, you really want a DHEA level that is between 300 and 500.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, because sometimes some men question me because they look at the age related thing. See, if you're 70 years old, your DHA should be up to whatever 150, and I'll shoot for a higher level, and the lab will print high for that person, but I agree with you. I think DHA should be optimized, not just brought up to age related norms.
Exactly. And that you make a good point that I'll relate back to the changing numbers for cholesterol and diabetes. The problem with the way lab data is collected and presented is they're taking 1,000 people off the street of Oklahoma or Kansas. The numbers get collected and then they're distributed in like a curve that looks like a mountain. The reason why over the last few decades diabetes is now diagnosed at much lower sugar levels, and cholesterol issues that relate to heart disease also are diagnosed at lower levels, is because there are sick people out there, and our country is biased towards poor health. So those numbers used to be quite high because there's no distinguishing between who's healthy and who's not. They're just drawing these numbers and then presenting them. So the same thing is applied to DHEA and testosterone, and that's why looking at normal numbers and normal ranges can be quite meaningless. In a vacuum, you must need the information about yourself, how healthy you are, what symptoms are you experiencing, what runs in your family, what do you eat, do you work out at all, and all of those factors have bearing on sustaining your health. It's not just about a number. The numbers are important, but not in the way they're presented. So going back to your question about DHEA, which I sort of veered off and digressed a bit.
Yep.
Getting a level is important. Most men, again, and women in their 30s will show a decline in DHEA, although not everybody. And it is a simple pill. And the most important relevant notion that you can take away from this is DHEA is a building block for estrogen and testosterone. So with inadequate stores of DHEA, you're not going to build enough. You're not going to make enough testosterone. You can bypass it by taking testosterone, but I had this patient, I'll never forget, Peter, who worked with one of the main pharmaceutical companies but wanted to go. He retired at 65, wanted to go and act. He had a screen card, I think. And he came in one day, and I evaluated him, went home, and he told me, he called up, he said, I forgot to tell you about one of my vitamins. And I had just gotten his labs back, and his free testosterone at 65 was rather up there. And I was wondering, how could it be so high? He's not taking anything. And it turns out he was taking DHEA, and that was contributing to his testosterone.
But it doesn't for every man, because DHEA sometimes can be normal and testosterone very low, and vice versa. Testosterone can be fine and DHEA low. And DHEA seems to work differently in different men and, different among the sexes. It can either contribute to testosterone or it can go the estrogen route, correct?
Yes, it can. And I think what we're talking about is there's levels, and then there's how does the body use and metabolize that level. So you can see levels that are completely out of sync, but you have to look at what's going on beneath the surface. And now there are actually genetic tests that can show you how we metabolize the hormones, how we metabolize drugs. And I'm sure you've heard, like I, people who come in and say, I'm exquisitely sensitive. I just need a tenth of the dose that you give to other patients.
Yep.
And other people who come in and say, you have to give me 10 times the dose because my body uses it up immediately. And there's so many factors. I think of it as multifactorial. How fast does the liver clear it? Are you on other drugs, for example, like anti-seizure drugs that might speed up metabolism? What's your genetic propensity in your genes? How are you wired to metabolize? And all of those factors beyond the level are going to have bearing on how your body uses these hormones. Needless to say, DHEA has been shown to be important in libido, in bone density, and a number of other factors. So
And as a natural antidepressant as well, it seems to.
It can. In some hands, it has been shown to be that.
Right. So briefly, let's touch on HGH. Are you a big fan of human growth hormone?
So my desire to be a fan of any hormone is nil. It's kind of like asking me, am I a fan of aspirin? Mm-hmm. Aspirin does some great stuff and it does some bad stuff, and it depends on who you are and what your needs are, whether an aspirin a day is right for you and whether the dose should be a low dose or should it be a regular pill. Should it be 81 milligrams or a baby aspirin, or should it be a 325 milligram regular aspirin? And that's because the body cat is equipped to deal with hormones in different ways. And so HGH is a very important hormone, human growth hormone, and the reason it got so much attention was back in the early 90s, Dr. Rudner did a study where they looked at 60-year-old men, and they randomized a group to growth hormone and a group to the salt injection, you know, not growth hormone, saline injection. And they found that in the men who took growth hormone, there was an increase in muscle mass, an increase in bone, a loss of visceral fat, and overall a sense of well-being. And it turns out that growth hormone in conjunction with testosterone is actually synergistic and helps your heart, it helps your brain, it helps your function. It just doesn't put on muscle and bone and help you lose fat. It actually does a lot of other great things in the body. But there are natural ways to increase it. And the goal that I drive for is balance above all. We look at the risk-benefit ratio, whether it's aspirin or it's growth hormone. In fact, if aspirin, one of my favorite sayings is if aspirin came up for approval now and didn't just get, you know, used out there over the counter, I don't know that the FDA would approve it because it causes a lot of problems as well as it helps in other ways. And the same thing is true for growth hormone. For example, with growth hormone, we know that if you don't have adequate growth hormone and you go through a procedure that staples your belly because you have way too much weight and it's putting you at risk of death, or a bypass, and you're still a diabetic, which is very common in those situations, and you have inadequate growth hormone can reverse and cure your diabetes when they've done studies looking at this. We have some natural ways to increase growth hormone. We've created some supplements that contain arginine or citrulline and ornithine, and by taking those supplements prior to sleep and prior to exercise, you actually trigger release of growth hormone. And that's a well-known fact in endocrinology. So we like to promote natural ways of doing it. But should that not work, or should a person really need growth hormone by all the parameters we look at, I have no hesitation because I monitor patients very, very closely. I'm looking at levels of growth hormone as predicted by IGF, IGF-1. Is a factor that is produced after growth hormone is released, and you can measure it, and you can also ascertain, is that in the right ballpark? Is the relationship of IGF-1 to the rest of the person's metrics, numbers, metabolism, and health correct? And if we see that we can get there with arginine or improving testosterone, which, by the way, when you improve testosterone, you're going to work out more effectively, you're going to put on more muscle, hence you're going to make more growth hormone naturally. So there's a lot of tricks of the trade where you work with an individual and you look at all the parameters that feed their health.
Well, absolutely. And as a professional board-certified endocrinologist, you know, you're familiar with all these things. I think it's a great field of medicine. And if I weren't an integrative or complementary medicine, if someone were to say, Dr. Hoffman, you know, no longer can you be a complementary physician, pick another field, one of the first fields I would gravitate towards is endocrinology. So kudos to you for mastering the complexity of this. What's our today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? You've got a website, which is a great website. Tell us about that.
So the website is KamateMD.com. And, of course, we can answer questions, get a lot of questions through that. A lot of men want to write to us about what they're dealing with and where they're going. The next piece of what we're hoping to create will be an
online... By the way, and the website is KeepItUpTheBook.com, correct?
That's for the book. Exactly. The website for the practice is KamateMD.com.
Okay.
So either one of them will feed us, you know, will feed us information. Please do read the book. I think that if men want to learn about how they can best maintain their health span for the rest of their life, instead of just living a long life, to live a healthy life, not deal with illness and disease, there are ways to prevent and also investigate what's going on. And men can start with themselves by looking at what runs in their family, by looking at what they eat. And that's all in the book, by looking at the amount of sleep. We didn't have time to touch on it. I'd love an invitation back, but sleep is paramount. In fact, I think sleep trumps exercise. So that's all in the book, and, you know, it's it would be very cost-effective for someone to take a look at that.
Well, absolutely. And so I want to thank you very much and congratulations on getting the word out and helping a lot of men and women as well attain optimal fitness. Our guest, Dr. Florence Comite. Check out her book, Keep It Up. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.